time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Mike Weissman, who is with Reclaim the Media. He's a media advocate. And Ann Sutter, who is the executive director of Seattle Community Access Network. And we're going to be discussing the issues relating to public access television. So thank you both for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Let me start out and ask you both if you could describe your respective organizations. Ann, can we start with you? SCAN, what is that?
SCAN is a nonprofit that focuses on building community through media and has the contract with the City of Seattle to manage the public access channel 77 or 29 in some areas. That channel is carried throughout King County and even part of South Snohomish County. In addition, we manage a facility which permits people to come in and make television. We have a couple of studios, some edit suites, and equipment that can go out in the field. And we teach classes to people to so they can learn how to do it. In fact, each season we have about 200 different producers. This season we have 143 series producers. That is, that every week they either bring in a tape or come in and make a studio program for 4 months. And then we have slots which we maintain for people who are not going to be ready to do a program every week, and they can take those one-time slots on. The programs range considerably. Just about anything that you can think about in terms of both your local community and people who have points of view from which for which they put on programming gained from someplace else. So it cuts right across our general area, and we're real proud of the fact that we provide more locally produced programming in a week than all of the other channels in Seattle combined.
Very good. And Mike Weissman, Reclaim the Media.
Well, Reclaim the Media is a loose affiliation of many groups around the region that are involved in media advocacy. We have organized several conferences lately. We had a big Reclaim the Media conference last year about the same time that NAB was in Seattle, and we had people from all over the country coming to Seattle to strategize about the media advocacy movement and what people can do to reclaim more citizen involvement and citizen control over our media assets. We also were involved with planning the FCC hearing in March of this year in Seattle, and we organized the event at EMP in the evening, which was a free public event, and might have been, I think, the first time that a sitting FCC commissioner addressed the public at a rock show. So we've been very excited by the response here in the Seattle area to people around these issues. People are interested, they are involved, and they want to be more involved, and that's what we're here to do.
All right, so what do you two see as the important issues related to public access television?
Well, we're really excited because next week we have an opportunity to explore this with a large group of people in a program called Getting the Technology You Deserve. And this is kind of the citizen start of looking at the cable renewal process and the events that are going to happen over the next almost 2 years. The franchise essentially comes to its end in January of 2006. And there's a process that's mandated by federal law that tells the city the different ways in which it can look at what happens in terms of renewing that franchise. And our city is getting ready to engage in that process now, and we're hopefully here to help people understand that getting engaged is important to their future in terms of what that cable franchise will ultimately provide. By the way, it's important to understand that franchise will probably last somewhere between 12 and 15 years, depending on what gets negotiated. So this is a big investment in a future.
Right. This is these are long-term franchises. The Seattle cable franchise will expire on January 20th, 2006. Seattle also, that's the Comcast franchise, and that's 170,000 subscribers inside the city of Seattle. The Millennium cable franchise is a smaller franchise. It's 17,000 subscribers, but that's still a fairly good-sized cable franchise, as these things go, and that one will expire on March 1st, 2008. King County also has a franchise that covers the unincorporated areas of King County. It's been a little bit difficult to get the subscriber numbers back from Comcast on that because they're cagey, but I'm estimating around 180,000 subscribers in unincorporated King County. That franchise will expire on February 16, 2005. Millennium also has a cable contract in parts of King County. Then there are approximately 37 individual towns and cities inside King County. Each one of them also has franchises. And they're all being renewed in the next couple of years because about 10 years ago, cable systems were upgraded. And so you had a situation where a lot of cable franchises were sort of upgraded. That was when, if you remember, if you're old enough to remember, we went from about 30 stations to about, 70 stations. And now, and also the cable at that time went from a one-way system to a two-way system. And that was very, very important because that's what allowed us to put internet on the cable. Today, these cable franchises are, if not quite a license to print money, pretty darn close. Your cable bill, which 10 years ago was primarily for television and for, maybe a couple dozen channels at best, now today that same infrastructure without, really any significant changes is worth two or three times the value because the revenue from the data, the revenue from the internet. I mean, on my bill, for example, my what I pay for the internet side of my Comcast bill is two-thirds of my bill to Comcast, and one-third of it is the television. In the next 10 years, that's just the differences between internet and television and digital channels and digital radio and so forth are going to become fuzzier. It's all going to sort of merge into one vast, media mix. And that's in many ways very good for consumers, because it means you're going to have a lot more choice of content, and we think that that's good. Ann and I are here because we believe in free speech, and we believe that people should have an opportunity to hear lots of different voices. So that's all good, but it puts the cable companies in a much more dominant position in our economy, in a much more dominant position in deciding what content runs on those pipes. And that's something to be concerned about, and that's something that policymakers have to attend to. The Cable Act, which is federal law, was intended to give local communities a lot of authority over this. And what we're trying to do here in King County and in Seattle and the surrounding area is really get people energized to recognize that, you hear the words take back your media, but when it comes to these cable franchises, it's really true. You can take back your media. You do have the legal authority to do so. But we have to work with our electeds in the various towns in King County to let them know that this is something that we expect them to represent us on, that this is an issue where we expect them to have a little spine against Comcast and stand up to the company. So, that sort of sets out sort of the legal and political issues. Our conference next week, next Saturday, at Daybreak Star Center, is going to be an all-day conference hosted by Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility. And we will be bringing speakers from all over the United States and the region to come and talk to us about how citizens have been involved in other communities and what we can do here. So, we've often said, wouldn't it just be great to have the best people here so we could pick their brains and really learn how to do this and how to do it right? And we made a decision a few months ago to make that happen for people in Seattle. So it's open to the public. You do not have to be a CPSR member to attend, although we will certainly have membership information available at the conference. It's at Daybreak Star. It runs from approximately 8:30 in the morning to approximately 5 o'clock at night. And we will have lunch there. And for more information on how to sign up for that conference, you can go to www.cpsr.org, and you'll see a link there for the Seattle conference. Click on it, and it will give you some information about who's going to be speaking, and there's an online registration form as well. But we really are looking for people to come to this conference and hear firsthand about some of the wonderful success stories around the United States that communities have had in standing up to these cable companies and really achieving some wonderful benefits for the public. I mean, one of the messages that I think people will take away from this conference next week is that success is possible. It takes a bit of work, it takes a bit of money, and it takes a bit of political will. But success, real success, is genuinely possible, and that's an exciting prospect, I think.
Can you give us a sense of where we're at now in terms of Seattle and perhaps examples in King County? What do we have for our public access compared to what we could have for it?
Well, let me talk about public access. Right. First of all, let me talk about PEG, because that's a little bit bigger concept. PEG stands for Public Educational and Government, and it's a provision that was created in federal law, which local governments can take advantage of, and that is to ask for set-asides of channel and money to support those particular uses of the cable. Actually, in King County, many of our jurisdictions use a cable channel for their local government. King County has a channel. Seattle has a channel called the Seattle Channel. And probably about 15 other jurisdictions use a channel for piping out their local council meetings or some other programming. Additionally, the educational people have six channels. The university has two, community colleges have two, and the K-12 has two. And they're used in different ways throughout King County, depending on what area you're in. Public access, one. There's about to be a second one, but it's going to air on the same channel in South King County. So there's only one channel available at this point in time, no matter where you live in King County, that's going to be public access. And only
that's
one
for the people.
For the people. And only one center, although a second one's coming online in South King County, only one center where you can get access to the technology and the equipment. A consultant that we hired recently to come up and look at our performance over the past several years essentially told us that with the amount of programming that we air now, we should be running four channels. And what he pointed out to us is that you cannot really go very far when you have no repeat programming, and when you have to use a lottery in order to give equity in terms of slots, which means that your program times move around. So it's very difficult for people to build a constituency in terms of the audience and to keep up with that. So we're in extremis for amount this size. When I was asked recently by our national organization, the Alliance for Community Media, how many subscribers we served, and I said 430,000. She said, oh, you mean 43,000? I said, no, I mean 430,000 subscriber households. She was stunned because there's almost no other public access channel that reaches that many subs, mostly because they have additional channels for their use for local communities. So we really have stretched more than most places the use of a single channel way beyond what we would see in other communities.
One of the things that we're going to be doing at the conference next Saturday is we'll be speaking with people who are success stories in our region, and one of those is Portland, Oregon. Portland, Oregon negotiated a very firm contract with Comcast, and many of us might remember reading in the newspaper about the city of Portland and Comcast going to the courts over the open access provisions. These cable franchises are so important because so many people get their news and information over television. But as Anne has pointed out, they're also important because it's how we make our own television in which we communicate and have a larger conversation with the community. But finally, as I indicated a minute ago, you know, the real value in these cable franchises now is the data portion. And that's a portion where I think we've all come to recognize that there's a public interest component as well. And it's not just the internet so you can go buy more stuff. The internet and broadband, high-speed internet, is a platform, and it allows people to do all kinds of things that we can do in the community as far as additional services for people that would run over the data portion, and also as far as, you know, an internet where we have open standards, open access to our local ISP community in the tech sector for economic development, and internet network that's secure, that meets the needs of the public, and that is a public interest-driven kind of internet. We can do that. Portland did it. And David Olson, who is the director of the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, will be here next Saturday to speak to us at our CPSR conference, talk about how Portland got that. He is the individual who wrote the open access provision in the Portland franchise. That provision was recently reaffirmed by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals just a week ago. So, you know, Portland was right. Communities do have a right to ask for open access in their internet and to use the internet portion of the cable franchises for public interest purposes. And I just think it's great that David is going to be able to be with us. We're also going to have Mark Cooper from Consumer Federation of America. Now, he's the research director at the Consumer Federation of America, and he's one of these guys that whenever you turn on NPR or Bill Moyers or Amy Goodman or whoever it might be who's talking about, you know, the FCC and media advocacy, Mark is the guy that he's sort of the go-to guy, our national expert on these issues. He's going to be with us as well. So it's going to be an opportunity to really get the best quality information from the people who are really the best qualified to give it, and we're very excited about that. Now, let's just turn a second to what we can do in Seattle on that, and that is communities have a right under federal law to have this internet portion of the cable franchise that is called an institutional network. And in many communities, these institutional networks are a big driver of economic development. They do that by connecting all the government buildings with the nonprofit sector, you know, hospitals, healthcare clinics, schools, but also connecting that institutional network up with arts and cultural institutions in the nonprofit sector, organizations like KEXP and the other nonprofit radio stations in the area, media centers like 911 Media Arts or Consolidated Works, and then, of course, the universities. You connect them all up on a network. Some of us who have, you know, been studying media or the computer science over the last few years have come across this theory that, you know, the more people you have connected to the network, the more the network is valuable. And if you believe that, and I think that does have a lot of truth to it, then you recognize that connecting up all these different organizations to a network like that is what makes it valuable to us as citizens of the region. It allows, for example, Seattle Art Museum to send a live audiovisual lecture to schools around the region. It allows one school to teach a class in which students from another school are able to tune in live and in an interactive fashion. It allows a student who might be at home or might be in the hospital or can't come to school for some reason to be able to receive live instruction and follow along with their classmates. The possibilities are really just endless, and I don't like to get too hung up on the applications because new wonderful ones will come along. we're going to have the tribes. Elston Lawson is from the Affiliated Tribes of Northwest Indians. He will be coming to talk about some of the technology projects that the tribes are doing using the new broadband technology, and things like language classes that help preserve and enhance Indian culture are some of the very innovative and I think thrilling experiments that are going on out in Indian country. And Lawson is going to come and speak to us about that. He was recently featured in a big article in the New York Times, and we're very, very pleased to have him with us as well. So as you can hear, it's really going to be some really cutting-edge material presented at this conference next week, and people are going to recognize, I think, that we could be getting an awful lot more out of these cable franchises than our elected officials have chosen to give us locally.
Well, I'm going to add something to that. Mike said I didn't want to talk a lot about the applications, but I actually believe that's an essential thing to understand, is that the applications that will unfold over 12 to 15 years will be significant, not just in terms of economic development, but in terms of social services, educational information kinds of services. And the cable, and I don't call it cable anymore, I really call it broadband, because it's really important to note this is a big pipe, big pipe that runs down our streets, across our highways, and connects us all up. It is not going to be overbuilt. It will be a primary carrier.
Yeah, we're not going to have competition between carriers. The overbuilding is never going to happen. And when you hear people promise you that, they're really promising you pie in the sky. So but these networks are all about the bits.
Right. Without competition, the cost to access these kinds of services can be handled in a monopolistic way. It's whatever the market will bear at some level, as opposed to whatever we need to have in terms of our future. So that's why people have to be involved, and they do have to imagine what those applications will be in the future, and they have to think about how it will serve them and their organizations and their communities. So when we say public access, we actually have two kinds of meetings. One of them is the broad general idea of what is access to this broadband pipe, and what do we get for the public good? And then, of course, public access meaning the use of media to say your own thing and to protect speech. So those are two different things, and that's why we tend to say community media, and public access is the larger, much larger question that has to be addressed as we go through the franchise renegotiations.
It also brings up the question of if there's any municipalities that are going to bat for people that don't have access to this pipeline, because quite frankly, from my point of view, it's still somewhat of an elitist pipe that doesn't go into everyone's house, even though my understanding is that everyone is paying into that to a greater or lesser degree. I mean, it's an infrastructure that's citywide, and, you know, I mean, it's just like the pipes that run by your house that carry the water or electricity.
Well, the pipes do run by the house,
that's
and
right.
About 60% of residences throughout the country, but also here in Seattle, do take the cable service. And I think you absolutely hit on something essential. And that's something we haven't talked about in the past because it was seen as entertainment television, not as a digital pipeline. Now that's how we have to talk about it in the future, that digital pipeline and access. I went to a women's summit a couple of weeks ago talking to a number of women engaged in different kinds of organizations with social services who said, I can't afford cable and I can't afford the internet. That's significant. Those big pipes are really important for those future applications. We have to think about a universal service requirement for cable.
Exactly. You know, Reclaim the Media sent out candidate questionnaires on exactly this topic to all of the candidates for city council and county council. We haven't received them all back, but we've been starting to get them back, and we're very, very concerned about the responses that we're seeing from candidates. It's not good. In the one race where we have responses back from both candidates in the race, and so I think it's fair to discuss, between Godin and Nicastro, Judy Nicastro is very, very pro cable company. And she felt that we shouldn't have even asked for the few little tidbits and crumbs that we got. She felt was unfair to the company. That's bad until you read Jane Codden's responses. And she doesn't see cable as a necessity. She sort of prioritizes it and says, well, if we have the funds after everything else is paid for, then, you know, I'm willing to look at this. I think that the candidates have a long ways to go. We in the community have a long ways to go in our education of these candidates about this is as important as education, health care, police, and fire protection. In fact, the irony of these responses that I'm reading is that police, fire protection, health care, education will all come to us over these pipes in the coming years. And so this pipe, this platform, is how we are going to get all those services. It's how the police and fire will monitor alarms remotely, and so they can manage this whole issue around false alarms. It's how elderly people at home will be able to be monitored by their doctor from the office so that they won't have to come in but to the doctor quite so often and be examined, because the doctor will be able to get their vital information over the pipe. It's how, as I indicated, you know, a student who's home ill or can't come into school for some reason can follow along with their classmates. This is critical, basic infrastructure. It's no longer about the Playboy channel or the shopping network or, you know, how many sports channels I'm going to get, whether I'm going to be able to watch Australian rugby or not. Obviously, I say jokingly, though, we still have to have the CBC, because I just think that the what I call our right to hockey night should not be infringed. But so there's,
well,
some,
I'll take them for their news. So.
I think there are some. There's the TV content part is certainly not gone, but this pipe now, as part of our critical urban infrastructure, must be addressed by candidates, and we hope that the candidates will take a much more aggressive stance with Comcast. What citizens can do is, first of all, come to our event next weekend. Go to www.cpsr.org and sign up to come to our conference next weekend. It is inexpensive, people will be able to learn about what they can do and what's worked in other communities. But we just have to say to everybody that this is something that people can rally around and can have an influence on. We know that from looking at the other communities.
Is that something that you either have a phone number for, or can people just show up to that for those that don't have internet access?
People can show up to it, absolutely. People can show up and register that day. I have to confess, it's CPSR, you know, it's the computer professionals,
right.
So everything's
right.
Online. But, no, you can show up. It's at Daybreak Star. Come at 8:30 next Saturday, Daybreak Star Indian Cultural Center in Discovery Park. It's a gorgeous conference facility. And come, and we will put a cup of coffee in your hand and teach you how to take back your media.
Very good. Just have just under 2 minutes left. Talking this morning with Mike Weissman and Ann Sutter, and could you tell people how they can get a hold of you and or your organizations if they want to find out more?
Well, if they have internet, it's www.scantv.org, scantv.org, or they can call our center at 522-4758 for information about public access television and the cable channel.
And the free classes people can take there, so they
free
can be their
classes,
own producers.
Right, free classes. And I'm still amazed. You can walk out, after taking one class, you can walk out with a $3,500 piece camera to go do your thing.
But you
nothing.
Have to bring it back.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to bring it back.
Otherwise, it would just be too expensive.
All right. Mike, Reclaim the Media. How do people find out more about that?
Well, we will be posting the candidate questionnaires and the candidate answers. And, you know, don't take my word for it. Read them for yourself. They will be posted on the Reclaim the Media website. We have lots and lots of information there for people on all kinds of these local and national media issues. And I think I'd urge people to go to www.reclaimthemedia.org. and we'll have all the candidates' answers posted in their own words. Read them for yourself and come to your own conclusions. But vote.
All right. I want to thank you both for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Mike.
Just been talking with Ann Sutter, who is Executive Director at the Seattle Community Access Network, and Mike Weissman, who is a media advocate with Reclaim the Media.